Hello, everyone. Now, part two of Summer of 1988, Cool Cruel Summers, and we're going to start off with another comedy. We ended with Roger Rabbit in part one. We're going to start with one of Darren and I's favorite Eddie Murphy movies, and that's on June 29th, Coming to America.
Good morning, Your Highness.
We've selected for you a very fine wife.
So, what kind of music do you like?
Whatever kind of music you like.
Do you have a favorite food?
Whatever food you like.
Fine girl, isn't she?
Oh my goodness! It is you!
This is the greatest day of my life.
It was very nice meeting you two.
Who was that?
Just the man I met in the restroom.
Coming to America.
Can you make my hair look like this?
What you want to make your hair look like that for? Wear natural, like Dr. Martin Luther King did. You ain't never seen Dr. Martin Luther King with no messy Jerry Colonel.
So glow.
Darren, coming to America, Eddie Murphy classic. So many great lines in that movie.
Yeah, I love this film. I loved it when I first saw it. And still, my wife and I dust it off every year or two and just watch it again. And I just think it's a delight to watch. A great old, again, fish out of water story, which was the sort of theme of the 80s. Eddie Murphy plays Prince Hakim of a fictional country called Zamunda in Africa, and you know, comes to New York, to Queens. He just kind of puts his finger on a map or something, doesn't he? He says, right, I want to go there to find a wife, and ends up falling for the daughter of a fast food chain.
whose name is McDowell, but he's always, you know, citing... You know, that the people from McDonald's are always on his case. And yeah. Truth be told, McDonald's was actually going to sue because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're actually, their name and their logo was coming up in it because they actually thought McDowell's was an actual restaurant. Those silly people at McDonald's. The cast is perfect in this. You know, you have James Earl Jones as King Jaffa Jaffa. Originally was actually going to be played by Sidney Poitier. While Lisa Lisa was actually going to be played by Vanessa Williams.
I have recently been placed in charge of garbage. Do you have any that requires disposal?
No, it's totally empty.
The relationship between Eddie Murphy and John Landis, who directed it, goes back quite a few years, obviously, to Trading Places. And there are elements of Trading Places that kind of pop up in this film, particularly with the two dukes that are... they stumble across one night. They're a couple of vagrants now, aren't they? A couple of bums. But also they tried to get Clarence Beeks in this film as well, Paul Gleason, which would have been interesting too, but sadly he was too... had to turn it down because of his commitments with Die Hard. I mentioned that the director, John Landis, and Eddie Murphy had a relationship that went back a few years. They actually made three films together because obviously they did Beverly Hills Cop 3 as well. But they didn't get on at all during this film. Eddie Murphy had huge problems with John Landis because he was off the back of that of the court case from the Twilight Zone. And, you know, a lot of people believe that he shouldn't have been acquitted with at that trial. And Eddie Murphy was one of those people. And there was a lot of animosity on the set, apparently. And he vowed never to work with Landis again after this. But they obviously patched things up because Beverly Hills Cop 3 came along in 1994.
I think they brought also on Rick Baker.
Exactly, yeah. It was the start of their relationship as well. So he'd done quite a number of films with Rick Baker, hasn't he, over the years?
Yeah.
From the two Nutty Professor films, Life.
Norbit
as well. Norbit.
Well, it's funny because the special effects makeup was nominated for an Oscar as well as the costuming. The costuming is awesome. And that dance sequence in the beginning, in the palace, starting, you know, the prince's, wedding, or I guess to see his future bride, that was done. That choreography was done by Paul Abdul, which is actually a fast tempo dance number to Thriller.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they're going back and forth like this.
Of course. Yeah. What were your thoughts on the sequel?
I liked it. You know what it is? We weren't going to get the actual coming to America that we wanted seeing the first one. But it was that nostalgia high that I got.
Yeah.
Seeing the characters again. We weren't going to get, you know, it was funny to see the people from the barbershop, you know, Mighty Sharp, you know, saying, you must be out of your goddamn mind. Rocky Marciano, Rocky Marciano. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Who's next? You know?
He has got a point. Cash or Clee was a bad motherfucker. Yeah.
I don't know how old Joe Louis was, but he got his ass whooped. What is this, velvet?
Apparently, I read this morning as well, so that kind of old Jewish white guy that he was made up as in the barbershop, when Baker did that makeup on him, Eddie Murphy got in a golf buggy on the lot and drove around.
Hitting shit and everything?
No, he drove around and jumped off the golf cart into the middle of a crowd of people and was shouting, I'm Eddie Murphy, I'm Eddie Murphy. And people just thought that he was just some batshit old bloke. They didn't believe it at all. They just carried on about their business. And the makeup was terrific.
Yeah, it's terrific. You didn't know that was Arsenio Hall as the other barber. He's who's always has something in his mouth. He's always eating. You know, that boy good, you know.
Oh, was that Arsenio, that guy?
That was Arsenio, yep. And also, Arsenio was also the preacher, you know.
Yeah,
Telling Lisa McDowell, you know, baby, you look so good. I wish I could have some gravy on you and slop you up with a biscuit. You and I can go on and on about some of the lines there. But you know what? It was very cool at the bar, for that year. It's 72% on Rotten Tomatoes. $36 million budget, made $289 million at the box office.
Wow. Yeah, he was riding high at that point, was Eddie Murphy, wasn't he? Really was. Yeah, no, great, great movie, and one that I always, it's one of my go-tos on a kind of Saturday night when we've had a couple of drinks. Oh, let's put Coming to America on. Always enjoy it.
Well, you know, we're going to enjoy our next one because on July 15th, an action classic comes out that you and I have watched and commentaried to with Dave McRae, and that's Die Hard.
They've seized a building and taken hostages. One man has managed to escape and is trapped inside.
I'm starting to get a bad feeling up there.
John McClane didn't want to be a hero.
Send the police now!
But he's the only chance they've got. Bruce Willis in Die Hard. 40 stories of sheer adventure. Rated R.
Now, well, you and I have talked about this at length with Dave. I don't think there's anything new we can talk about more, just that it's the definition of an action movie.
Yeah, I think I definitely think so. I think it was the next level of action, wasn't it? And it kind of explains why the likes of Rambo and Red Heat probably didn't do that well, because that kind of formula was tired then. And then obviously Die Hard comes along and just blows everything out of the water in terms of action movies. And it kind of raised the bar, you know what I mean, for these kind of non-stop action films. And there was so much energy and so much in terms of these huge set pieces that everybody from this point onwards tried to do something that one, you know, it tried to go that one better, didn't they? Yeah. And no one really accomplished it until the likes of something like Speed came along in about 4 or 5 years later. But yeah, it really upped the action movie game at the time. And I remember seeing this in the cinema with some friends and I was just blown away. A friend of mine, it didn't come out in the UK until I think around about Christmas time, and a friend of mine had been staying in the US and he came back and he would not shut up about this film. You have to see Die Hard, you have to see Die Hard. And I was like, what the hell, you know, what is it? And who's in it? Arnie? Stallone? What is, you know? No, it's Bruce Willis.
Who they thought they wanted those two to be in it, as long Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra, and we've said this loads of times before, but for those of you who don't know, Frank Sinatra was the studio's first choice for John McClane. They had to offer the role to Frank Sinatra first. It was a contractual obligation, because years before that, I think in the 60s, I think it was, Sinatra did a movie called The Detective, and there was a clause within his contract that if ever a movie was made with that character in, then he gets first refusal. They wrote a sequel to The Detective, a book called Nothing Lasts Forever, which was the sequel to The Detective. And eventually that script, that book is used to create a script for Die Hard. And so Sinatra had to be approached first legally. And thankfully, he was in his, God, he would have been in his 60s, late 60s, 70s at that point. And so thankfully he refused.
Fly me to the moon.
Thankfully he refused, and we got Bruce Willis, which at the time was a really odd casting, and no one really believed it would work, but God, turns out they couldn't have cast it better, I don't think.
Yes.
I thought he was terrific.
Yep, he looks like an average cop, doesn't he? He's not muscular.
Yeah, he's just like an everyman, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got a decent build, and you know, and plus Alan Rickman, he's probably one of the top villains of all time.
Yeah.
Cinematic villains. You know, I think he's like number, what did we say before? He was number two, right, on our commentary, and then Darth Vader being number one.
Yeah.
But a likable villain.
All-time favorite villains or something, yeah.
Yeah. But if anybody wants to go and check out our commentary with Dave McRae, it's on our channel. You know, there's not any more we can just talk about Die Hard. We'd be here, you know, forever. But with a 94% on Rotten Tomatoes, very cool, you know, for the summer, of course, because it only had a $30 million budget and made $142.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
So our next movie that was released on that same day, another movie besides American Werewolf in London, another movie Darren and I bonded over was this movie, A Fish Called Wanda.
To 20 million.
To a job well done.
To us.
This is the big one. There are 135 of them. That makes 13 millions, my friends.
It was the perfect crime.
I love robbing the English. It's so polite.
Until it became...
Disappointed!
The ultimate con.
George moved the loot?
The jewels are very safe.
Where'd he move it, Ken? Where did he move it?
Now to find the diamonds.
Whatever George decides to do, he's going to tell Leach first.
She'll have to get one English lawyer.
I knew it! You're Archie Leach!
Leach.
On the hook.
I want you to make love with me.
Pardon?
Nothing.
A Fish Called Wanda.
Where are the diamonds?
Is a comedy with exquisite taste.
Down the hatch.
Are you totally deranged?
Apologize.
I'm really, really sorry. I apologize unreservedly.
Monty Python's John Cleese.
Will you leave immediately, please?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
Kiss me there.
Michael Palin.
You tell him from me, but I'll...
And Kevin Kline in the role that won him the Oscar.
Avoid the green ones. They're not ripe yet.
A Fish Called Wanda.
Do you want me to get a big car for these?
Yes, get away.
Darren, you and I, if we had one half of our heart for American Werewolf in London, the other half is for A Fish Called Wanda, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, I absolutely love that. I mean, I love it for the fact that that Jamie Lee Curtis is in it. I love it for the fact that John Cleese is in it. I love it for the fact that... It's a British comedy. And I also love it for the fact that Kevin Kline's role as Otto is so damn good in this film that he won a Best Supporting Actor, which I just think is terrific.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you? Well, would you like to know where you'd be without us, the old US of A, to protect you? The smallest fucking province in the Russian Empire. That's what...
Just to let you know, everybody, that every time Darren says something snarky or takes the piss out of me, I shoot him back a little, you know, a little picture, a little meme, and it's Otto saying, "Oh, you British think you're so superior."
it's such a great... I mean, for those of you who haven't seen it, and I guess some of the kind of maybe younger subscribers to the channel may have not seen it. It's about four friends that do an armed robbery in London. And then one of the guys is arrested by the police, ends up going into jail while the court case is pending. And he knows where the loot is, but none of the other three do. Or one of the other three does. He gets told. Yeah, John Cleese plays Archie Leach, who's George, who's the guy who's been put into prison. It's his barrister.
Named after Cary Grant.
Named after Cary Grant, yeah. And Jamie Lee Curtis kind of ends up having an affair with John Cleese in order to kind of... With everyone in this film. Ends up having an affair with John Cleese in order to get closer to him, to try and manipulate the legal process and all that kind of stuff, to find out where the diamonds are. So much fun. So it's a farcical comedy, some really kind of near the knuckle jokes, some shocking moments of comedic animal cruelty, particularly with Patricia Hayes and her dogs. And also
fake cruelty, fake cruelty.
Yeah, fake cruelty. But very funny, very funny. In fact, the outtakes of those sequences with the dogs accidentally being killed are hilarious and go so far beyond what they put on in the final cut of the movie that they have to be seen to be believed. It's just great fun.
This movie is so much fun and so funny that it actually did kill somebody. Audience member watching this movie laughed himself to death. He had a heart attack.
Is that true? Really?
Yep. He was cracking up so hard that his heart actually couldn't take it anymore. That's how.
What was that, in a test screening or in a public screening?
It was a public screening. He actually had a heart attack laughing so hard. Now, if I made a comedy and I killed somebody laughing so hard, I think the studios would have said, I think you've done your job.
It is interesting as well that, you know, I mean, the director of this, Charles Crichton, for one, we should mention him as well. He was a really famous, he was old when he directed this. I mean, he was in his... Jeez. I think he was in his like late 70s when he directed.
Oh, he
this.
Looked older than that.
Yeah, yeah. And Cleese purposefully picked him because of his past of directing the Ealing comedy. He worked for Ealing Studios and he directed a lot of the Ealing comedies, things like The Lavender Hill Mob. And I think as the production went on, it obviously became, I mean, so, you know, you could Kevin Kline, Jamie Lee Curtis, John Cleese, Michael Palin, all these kind of really big named stars. And I think it became a little bit too much for him as production went on. And so John Cleese started to take over some of the directorial duties while Charles Crichton went into the studio and started cutting the movie together. They did a kind of sort of pseudo sequel, maybe about 6 or 7 years later with exactly the same cast. Didn't work as well. I mean, it's still fun in some ways, but it didn't enjoy the success that this movie did. Have you ever seen it, Frank?
Yeah, it's very forgettable. It has some kind of, you know, little laughable bits, but this A Fish Called Wanda is funny throughout the whole thing.
I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Creatures something.
Fierce Creatures.
Fierce Creatures.
Fierce yeah. Creatures. That, and it kind of is to A Fish Called Wanda what Shock Treatment is to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know what I mean? They tried to do, like, reinvent it, and it didn't quite work, and that's exactly what happened here. But
what is
still,
your favorite part?
I love the bit where Otto's holding John Cleese upside down out of the building. That's just fantastic. On the Docklands, that is super.
I like, there's so many, like, you're right, there's so many, but mine is just the you know, I got the, you know, you English think you're so superior. That's funny too. But my, it's towards the end, and it's Otto saying to Ken, it's Ken coming to kill me.
It's Ken coming to kill me. How are you going to catch me, Ken?
The stuttering
revenge
thing,
but
the stuttering in the film. Michael Palin's character's got a terrible stutter. Stutterers apparently complained about Michael Palin's portrayal of a stutterer. And so he actually ended up founding the London Center for Stammering Children to try and, you know, make himself feel better, I think.
Whatever, you know, but you know, they don't have to feel bad about themselves because 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, $7.5 million budget, and $62 million at the box office. Nothing
for
to feel
a British
bad
comedy,
about.
Yeah,
or a British for comedy.
A British comedy, that's magnificent. It really
and a
is.
Classic, I mean, a classic movie.
Yeah, yeah, you should try it out, folks. You'll have a lot of fun watching that film.
But let's continue with our funny bones, because on July 20th, Charles Grodin and who's the other guy now? Robert De Niro come out with this classic, Midnight Run.
Midnight Run has been called the best new movie in years.
I can't fly. I also suffer from acrophobia and claustrophobia.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't cooperate, you're going to suffer from fistophobia.
Robert De Niro is taking Charles Grodin into custody.
You are the dumbest bounty hunters I've ever seen!
This could be the beginning.
Come on, cigarettes are killers.
Of a beautiful friendship.
Strike!
Midnight Run, rated R.
Just relax.
I'm totally relaxed.
Darren, I have to admit, you know, well, guess what? I seen only half of Midnight Run.
Really?
I don't like Charles. I think he's a dick.
You don't like Charles Grodin? Well, poor old Charles Grodin. I like him in this a lot. Interesting. Yeah. Wow. I'm stunned. You've only seen half of it. I thought this would have been your cup of tea.
You know, you're also stunned that in the last episode, I liked Dundee better than Indy.
Mr. Freeze. But
take it away. Take it away.
It's a great fun film. Robert De Niro plays Jack Walsh, a bounty hunter who's sent in to find a mafia accountant that's skipped bail. And the FBI has no success in locating the Duke, as Charles Grodin's character is called. And so they send in Robert De Niro. In order to claim his $100,000 fee, he has to transport the Duke from New York to Los Angeles. But the mafia and the FBI are in pursuit of them. And also another bounty hunter who's got kind of ulterior motives, played by John Ashton, who was Taggart in Beverly Hills Cop. It's a funny film. It's a really funny film. Robert De Niro, kind of, I don't recall many comedies that he'd been in up to that point. But yeah, he really knocks it out of the park in this. And he was looking for some lighter material to do, and he'd read Penny Marshall's Big, which obviously ended up being Tom Hanks. And he wanted to play that role, but he was just too old to play that role. Mm. Unless he was going to play Robert Loggia's part in it or something. But no, I presume it was Tom Hanks's part. The studio wasn't interested in having De Niro play that role at all. And so he was offered this movie, which was a good move for him. I think it was terrific. How did it perform now? So it was 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. It cost $30 million. It's quite a large-scale action film. And obviously there's, you know, the kind of traveling across the US all the time within it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, $81.6 million at the box office. So a really cool summer for Martin Brest's Midnight Run.
Yeah, and the word fuck is said 119 times in this movie.
Which is almost as many as this last podcast.
Yes, yeah. But you know, Charles actually for the longest time still had the scars on his wrist from actually staying in those handcuffs for so long.
Yeah, he's handcuffed to De Niro for pretty much the bulk of the movie. If he's not handcuffed to De Niro, he handcuffs him to something else. Yeah. And they actually use real handcuffs. And yeah, he had a bad old time with that, didn't he?
Yeah. You know, so I guess there's some. I have to finish watching it. I have to.
When did you start it? Like 1989 or something? Or
probably like in the late early 90s. I have to go back. Jeez. It's not really on too much, and I could probably watch it at my, you know, whenever I want to, at a click of the button, as they say. But I
like the fact you said I'll finish watching it. Just watch the whole thing again.
I gotta think back. Where did I leave off?
Exactly.
This is good enough.
It was a funny bit. Which one? Go. It's just watch it all again. Jesus.
Maybe it's the part where De Niro actually hits somebody. Well, he's hitting everybody all the time in real life in movies.
Yeah. What's next?
All right. We're going to end on two horror movies, but we're going to talk about first August 5th, The Blob.
If it had a mind, you could reason with it. If it had a body, you could shoot it. If it had a heart, you could kill it. Now, man is no longer the supreme being on this planet.
The organism is growing at a geometric rate. By all accounts, it's at least 1,000 times its original mass.
Nobody believes me about what happened tonight.
What did happen?
You were there, you saw.
Plasmid, life form that hunts its prey. Predator.
I want that organism alive.
I think you ticked it off.
The Blob. Terror has no shape.
Now, Darren, this is the remake. We're going to talk about, which is actually probably better than the original, which actually starred Steve McQueen, and it was supposed to star his son in this one. They wanted Chad for this. Chad was the son of course, Steve McQueen. He was actually Dutch in the movie Karate Kid, the kid with the blonde hair. That's Steve McQueen's son.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's
Did this movie? How do you find the remake of The Blob?
I've got fond memories of going to the cinema to see it. All these films we're talking about. This was when I was at my kind of, I guess, at my peak in terms of cinema going in the late 80s. I remember going to see this and being really surprised by it. I actually think that, even to this day, I think it's one of the better horror remakes that we've had over the last 30, 40 years. I haven't watched it for a couple of years, but it does. I think they did a great job with it, I think.
Yeah. You know, and tell you what, Shawnee Smith is easy on the eye. She's very pretty in this movie. And
I hadn't realized until today that it's the same girl, Amanda, from the Saw franchise.
Yep.
I never knew that. They actually saw
her in this and actually thought she would be good for that, and she actually was. There's that one part where she sees her date being engulfed and eaten by the blob, and he's reaching out for her. That is actually a genuine scream and look on her, because she's never seen that effect until they start filming.
Yeah, yeah. But it was... What was it that they used now? I got it rid of. A lot of the blob slime juice was made out of methacel.
Yeah.
Which is
and
both
silk.
Unbelievably slippery and a thickening ingredient for milkshakes.
Eat me, huh?
So the blob was made out of a giant milkshake, basically, or thereabouts,
and silk too, because that's how they got the form to, you know, stick all over without being sticky.
They just
threw it on people and it would just, you know, roll all over them. There was actually that one scene where there's a person that was dismembered. He had, you know, his legs were cut off and his arm was, and he was talking and saying like, run. It's an actual actor by the name, I forgot his name. He just recently passed. But he did 6 movies in this current state he was in. He was a Vietnam veteran, and he was a double amputee, and he became an actor. And they threw him in a lot of horror movies. And so they actually, not a lot of special effects when it came to people. They actually hired people with some disfigurements and stuff. And rightly so. I think it's good that anybody can get into being an actor, become an actor based upon, you know, what they look like. Is no different than what studios do now, to tell the truth.
Exactly.
But the one of the first appearance of a horror icon, that's Bill Moseley, is in it.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, he'd done Texas 2, I think, at that point, hadn't he?
Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw 2.
Your favorite, right? You like you like Chop Top Touch.
Damn film, honestly. Really annoys me. Noisy, bloody, loud, horrible, backward movie. It's just...
Now, there was supposed to be a sequel to this movie. It's been in development hell and actually probably writing hell for years.
It's really suffered at the box office, though. I can't see how they would take a go. I mean, it's kind of... I don't know whether nowadays people would take it seriously. Chuck Russell managed to do a good job of kind of... Chuck Russell, who did The Mask, and that's The Mask with Jim Carrey, not The Mask or Mask with Cher. What was the other film he did? He did Eraser, and he also did Elm Street 3, I believe, as well. I think he did a really good job of making basically some pink goo.
some boogers.
Yeah. Scary. It's yeah. But I'm not sure now whether people would buy into that.
I think they could. I think the nostalgic feeling is still there for people like you and I. People are still, you know, think it's a good remake.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a terrific remake.
And that phone booth scene where she's trapped in there and she sees her boyfriend, the sheriff, and he's all practically half melted. And he's sliding up the side of the phone booth looking at her.
It has a good pedigree, though, because it was co-written by Frank Darabont. So, you know, it's I think it's a solid horror film. Also, John Carpenter was originally involved with the film and was down to direct it. Whether he was kind of sidetracked with, I'm trying to think what it would be, Prince of Darkness or something like that, or even They Live at the time. It would have been interesting to see what his take on it. The only thing that worries me about a remake of it now is it would be all CG, and so it would just lose some of that. You know, the practical effects side of things really works in this, to the point where is you're kind of scratching your head as to whether it is a practical effect because it looks that good. You know, time will tell if another movie remake comes along.
I think we need a sequel of The Blob versus The Stuff.
Oh, The Stuff. Another.
Well, you know what? It does have an audience, but apparently it didn't have an audience back in 1988 because it does have an actual 62% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is actually quite good. But $19 million budget, $8.2 million box office, less than half it made. There was nothing. I think it had to make its money back on VHS and certainly now DVDs.
Yeah, I mean, too much money went... Well, not too much money. They obviously did a great job, but almost half the budget was spent on the special effects. $9 million was spent on the special effects. That's a hell of a lot for practical effects back then.
So we're ready to close out 1988, but first we got to mention our honorable mentions, of course. And on June 3rd, probably a Tom Hanks classic and favorite of everyone everywhere, 97% on Rotten Tomatoes, $18 million budget, $151 million at the box office. Very cool for the movie Big. Darren, we can't say anything negative about this movie.
Oh, it's kind of a timeless film, isn't it? I think it's still, you know, there was a spate of these kind of role reversal movies in the 80s, the late 80s. I think there was Vice Versa with Judge Reinhold, and there was the Dudley Moore film Like Father, Like Son. Mm-hmm. But Big was the one that was the granddaddy of them all. I mean, the film was huge. It really, you know, established Tom Hanks as not just a comedian, but as a great actor as well. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those movies that you can watch at any time. It's just a really sweet, charming film that a four quadrant movie everybody likes. Yeah.
And then one of the most iconic scenes probably of movie history, the piano scene. Mm-hmm. Dancing at FAO Schwartz.
Such a really kind of a real classic feel to it, you know, a really kind of old fashioned feel to that sequence, isn't there? It's again really charming.
And in one of the few movies where Robert Loggia's not a dick.
I like Robert Loggia.
and fun fact for me personally, at work, I passed through all of the exterior shots, the streets, the under the George Washington Bridge. I actually go past those areas every day. So I actually go through I actually go through the sets of Big. It's actually pretty nice.
Well, you go through the sets of Big, and up until recently, every day I went through the sets of American Werewolf in London. So
there you go. The best of both worlds.
Yeah.
So next on June 17th, we have another honorable mention. I think it's a good movie. I don't know why people were talking about 56% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was Cruel for that summer, $3.5 million budget, but made a little over $800,000. And that was, to me, and this is to me, a horror classic. That's Waxwork.
Yeah, Waxwork was good. I enjoyed it.
Good concept.
Yeah. A great old werewolf sequence in there as well.
Great makeup.
It was a surprise. I mean, it never came out in the cinema in the UK. I just remember.
Why is that? What is the shit? Do they test the shit here first?
They did. Well, you know, back then there was nothing. You didn't have much in the way of day and date releases. So movies would release in the US first, and then further down the line, months later, they'd pick a date for the UK, and it either, you know, went out of the cinema or just went straight to VHS. And the majority of the shit we watch went straight to VHS in the UK.
Shit. Waste your money on the rental, not going there and buying, you know, outdated popcorn and flat soda.
Yeah.
But then on July 8th, you know, I think, which is probably one of the best sequels out of this franchise, 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I think is quite low for this movie. $3 million budget, 7.2 at the box office, so it made more than half its budget. And that's Phantasm 2, which I absolutely adore. I adore Phantasm 2.
It's not one of the best sequels in the franchise. It is the best sequel
okay.
in the franchise.
Okay, you got me there. It's the only watchable sequel in the franchise.
Yeah, no, it's good fun. Old Angus Scrimm, old 7 foot three of him or whatever he is.
Boy!
No, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And, you know, I always remember seeing Phantasm with my dad in the late 70s or early 80s. We watched that film together and, you know, the finger in the box and the ball flying around and all that
creepy
kind of
little
stuff.
Gnomes and everything.
Yeah. And it was a long time before this sequel came out. And I think what drew me to it was the fact that they used the Halloween 2 music on the trailer for this movie. So I was curious.
They did, people. They did.
They did. Interestingly, Brad Pitt almost had the role of Reggie in this film. What a film to launch your career on.
We got him in other stuff. So our last honorable mention on July 29th, a 7%. Is that correct? 7% on a Rotten Tomato?
Dog, the reviews were terrible for this.
$20 million as a budget, but it made $171 million at the box office, and it's a Tom Cruise classic, and that's Cocktail.
Yeah, 7% on Rotten.
Flipping
Tomato.
Drinks.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, yeah, it was.
You see that every day, don't you? See people flipping drinks all the time.
Well, I was talking to Colin Murdy does it, doesn't he? At his whatever bar, he's flipping bottles of Newcastle Brown Ale and things like that, isn't he? Where he works
with his
stout
shirt open and everything, and a little bit of was it electronic dance music playing in the background? I think he quit if he heard electronic dance.
Bottles are mild.
He let Aphrodite loose in the bar. That's what he would do. Kill.
Cocktail's fun. I like Cocktail. Anyway, back to our final film, Frank.
Our final film on August 19th. We're always ending on a horror movie. It's weird because I think the studios, you got to release them at the end of the summer. With a 52% on Rotten Tomatoes, a $6.5 million budget, and almost $50 million at the box office. And to some people, it's an Elm Street classic, and that's Part 4, Dream Master.
There is no one more terrifying on the screen today. He is the first in fear. And you thought it was only a movie. a brand new nightmare.
Welcome to Wonderland, Alice.
A Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 4, The Dream Master, rated R, starts Friday at theaters everywhere.
I'm not a big fan of this one, Darren.
It's kind of starting that sort of MTV Freddy side of things, isn't it?
Dave loves that part with the glasses, right? As it comes on the beach. That's the part you knew was
yeah,
MTV.
Yeah. I and the like the the way that Freddy comes back is just ridiculous. The dog pisses on his grave, and so he comes back to a dog pisses fire on his grave, and so he comes back to life.
Just imagine if he came out of the litter box.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's a daft film. I think I'd lost interest in Elm Street at this point. I did watch them, but this same year, Michael Myers came back in Halloween 4. And so this one just kind of, I went to the cinema to see it. I think I went on my own to see it.
You were the only one there.
Yeah, I don't think there was many people there watching it. I remember, I mean, I watched it. I think, did Dave do a Two Dudes on it?
Yes.
I think because I have it and I've bought it, and I think I bought it for that reason. I think the cockroach scene is pretty rank. That's pretty clever, the effects work in that. The effects artists were Howard Berger from KNB, mm-hmm. and I'm rattling my brain as to who the other one was now. I think it was, Beekler. It was John Carl Beekler from Friday the 13th, Part 7, and also Kevin Yeager as well. Who did the effects on this. The effects in it are pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
Some of the effects, particularly the cockroach scene, that's horrible.
The script was only written in 7 days, but it's a mess.
How do we bring you back to life? Got it. A dog pisses on his grave.
And they wanted to introduce dream travel.
Yeah.
Like you could travel and
that loop.
Your dream.
It's Robert Englund's favorite Freddy film, isn't it? He always
he's more MTV-ish, like you said. He's more comical in this one.
Yeah. But there's that loop sequence where they're running back to the car all the time, which kind of just goes on and on and on. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That dream loop? But yeah, it's okay. I think it was a good Friday night out. I remember there's a Jaws ripoff moment, isn't there, with the glove in the water.
Shark. Yeah. There's also a part where some horror movies shouldn't be HD. This is one of them. Because in the beginning, when Freddy comes out and he's going after Kincaid in the junkyard, and he says, "You shouldn't have buried me. I'm not dead."
Yeah.
Freddy's face was covered mostly in darkness, so you couldn't see him say that. But now in the HD version, his lips aren't even moving, and he says it. Darren, show it.
"You shouldn't have buried me. I'm not dead."
There it is.
Let's put it on. Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been better if they had Patricia Arquette to come back, but they didn't.
Yeah.
She didn't want to do it. She was like, I'm done. I'm done.
Yeah.
Even Bob Shea didn't want to even talk to the director.
Rennie Harlin, who did Die Hard 2 and Cliffhanger, and he did a lot of big films in the
Finnish.
Big budget
he was
movies.
Finnish.
Yeah, exactly. He was almost like a vagrant, wasn't he? He was almost like a homeless guy who
a
just
Die
kept,
Hard villain himself.
Yeah, he just kept banging on the door of New Line Studios and begging to direct this movie. And apparently he would visit the set quite often. And his persistence won one day to some degree because he was so clearly impoverished that his clothes never seemed to change day to day, and he even began to smell. And so they gave him the job of directing this film. What?
Based upon hygiene.
It launched his career. Who, 2 years later, he was directing Die Harder. So good for him, you know?
Yeah. And then later on, Cliffhanger, which is a superb, movie.
Deep Blue Sea, Driven.
Yeah. He now has a Hollywood pedigree just by, stinking.
But apparently, do you know the one person who did apply to be Alice?
Tuesday Night? Was it originally she wanted to be it? No. I know she sang the opening credit.
They did. Apparently, they auditioned around about 400 to 500 people for the role.
Who they want to be Alice, or who auditioned it for?
Ellie Cornell.
Really?
Yeah. She auditioned.
I should know that.
Hmm.
You know, but she went on to actually, I think, to be better as Rachel.
Yeah. Yeah. Until they killed her in the first 20 minutes of the Halloween 5.
Not even in a psycho way where it's actually memorable.
Yeah, she's like picking her dirty washing out of the basket and got knifed or something, didn't she? Like,
looking at Jamie's photo and it's a big pair of scissors. Not even a good kill.
No, awful. What a shame.
Yeah, well, yeah, so that's it. Elm Street 4, you know, people still like their Elm Street movies. You know, when they made, you know, was it nearly 7 times or actually 8 times its budget, so... It actually ended on a cool, the summer ended cool with Elm Street Part 4.
And that's it. Yeah, that's our, that's the end of our episode. It's good to be back doing this. We've really enjoyed these last two episodes. Next week, we're going to be recording Cool Cruel Summers 1989 with Dave McRae. So he's agreed to come on the show and we're going to talk about some of the big movies of 1989, which will include things like, I think, Ghostbusters 2, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. There's some big titles for next week's episode. And thanks again to everybody who's subscribed to us. Our subscriber count is going up daily. We appreciate everybody who's tuned into this. We're getting really good numbers for our videos now. We're going to do some Halloween stuff over the coming weeks. We're also planning a Nightmare on Elm Street quiz to do at some point, maybe in October. And also we've got our 1 year anniversary, which is around about October 14th, 15th, which we're going to do a live stream primarily based around American Werewolf in London. So watch out for news on that. And subscribe. Those of you that aren't subscribed, please subscribe. Ding the thing down there somewhere. That's it, Frank, down there. And we'll be back next week.
Yeah, and, you know, it's always good to see new faces as well as the people who are already subscribed to us, you know, always chiming in on their opinions and on our Facebook page. It's good to see, and it's good to be back doing this. And, you know, Darren, I must applaud you because this editing this stuff, it's got to be exhausting because we're going sometimes 2-3 hours doing this stuff. And we got to put it down to a actually watchable time for people.
I enjoy it. It's fun.
Good. Okay. We'll see you back for maybe a little quick fire somewhere in between, maybe. But if not, we'll see you back in 1989. And as always, stick to the roads.
And the best of luck.
Fuck you! Fuck you! And fuck you! Who's next?